then after hand over to Chairperson, I think the Chairperson of Risk and Audit Committee to make a presentation on the pilot.
You're muted. We can hear you.
So you didn't hear anything about Mthwalo?
We didn't hear the last paragraph.
So thank you very much, Minister. I'll now hand over to yourself and DM if you want to make some few comments and go straight to the Chairperson for Risk and Audit Committee to make a presentation. And tomorrow, Minister and DM, and DG will be having a follow-up meeting with CGB tomorrow morning, because we felt that on Tuesday we didn't finish. So what we've done, we have then applied for an agent meeting to the House. Fortunately, we were granted permission to have that meeting tomorrow, because remember, from the next week, it will be reserved. So we wanted to finish up with this report this week. Yeah, over to you, Minister.
And okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair of the Portfolio Committee. The whip of our Portfolio Committee, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Deputy Minister of our department, Memkide, Director General of the department, Memaluleke, good evening. Members of the Kwetla, thank you for the opportunity to engage with you and to respond to the outstanding questions from the last meeting or presentation of the department made to the Portfolio Committee on the 18th of August. We value the commitment to our collective efforts to end gender-based violence and femicide through the implementation of the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. Professor Mkize, our Deputy Minister, that we're together. But we've had a long day because we had to have a meeting a webinar meeting. 54 member states of Commonwealth, led by the Secretary General. What struck me is in almost all the countries, particularly the developing countries, and majority are developing countries, there was just one funny, lineup that where women were poor and struggling and there was lockdown, the gender-based violence went up, particularly with the vulnerable women who would have been just scraping here and there to earn a living. From Madagascar to the smallest of the Maldives and so on. We will recall that in the last presentation, Chair, there were few outstanding questions where they, we promised to send a written response. We have since submitted the written responses. We stand ready to respond to further questions from the honourable members. Honourable Chairperson, as mentioned previously, to date I have convened 4 interministerial committee or IMC meetings since the COVID-19 pandemic lockdown. We are making progress in the implementation of the National Strategic Plan and the establishment of the Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. The presentation today will give an overview of the progress made to date in both the implementing and institutionalizing implementation of the National Strategic Plan. At the center of the National Strategic Plan is the power of working together across the 6 pillars of the NSP. Just to remind ourselves that these 6 pillars are: 1, accountability and coordination and leadership. 2, prevention. May I repeat, prevention and rebuilding of social cohesion. 3, justice, safety and protection. 4, response, care, support and healing. 5, economic power for women and access to finance. 6, research and information management. We have commenced a process to establish the council. In fact, we started much earlier, and the civil society organizations had some reservations, and they are now coming back to us to say, hurry up. When we said to them, but you had some reservations, but they said that those made reservations were few, and they are in a hurry because they see there is no alternative. While we're still waiting for the council, which is still being established, an enabling environment is essential for the multi-sectoral implementation of the NSP. We are working hard developing accountability, coordination and leadership structures of Pillar 1 that addresses the gender-based violence, femicide crisis, and the response across all government tiers. As part of the institutionalization, the implementation of the 6 NSP pillars, we are employing a number of processes as part of building solid and seamless monitoring, evaluation, monitoring and evaluation system as we continue with our advocacy work. What we really want to emphasize is that we are doing this anticipating that this will cascade down not just at national, but district, previous offices, districts, local municipalities would also replicate this so that it becomes, in reality, it should work for women. The department, together with the Department of Planning, monitoring and evaluation, as well and monitoring evaluation implementation, that department had to take ownership. The department have been grouped into six pillars of research. This has enabled the department to further refine the MNE implementation plan indicators and take responsibility for resourcing implementation. The president has spoken consistently on the need to address the gender-based violence and femicide at grassroots level. At the provincial level, discussions are underway with the Office of the Premier, as I said earlier on, cascading local municipalities. Ultimately, the process must be replicated in all spheres. And all civil society organizations that are serious about working with us in controllers are key. Traditional leaders, priests, faith-based organizations, traditional leaders, all those who claim to be ours should come to the party. The national service plan approach harness the roles, the responsibilities, resources, and commitment of all stakeholders across different of government and sectors of the society. The partnership with the UN Women six pillars based on interim technical teams comprising of government and its agencies, private sector, labor federations, research institutions, academia, and civil society has been established. The interim technical team are collaborative and organic structures that create voluntary platforms to mainly facilitate a multi-sectoral engagement and give evidence to the ownership of the implementation of the MSP. The collaborative structure of the has implemented the short-term interventions during Women's Month. The intervention feeds into the weekly progress report to the president. Currently, the collaborative work is working on 100-day activities. We actually should be celebrating and supporting women 100 days or more. But we are not forgetting that it really has to be 365 days. I'm not looking back on the fact that women not to emphasize again on the state of activism and want to see progress. In closing, I would like to emphasize that gender-based violence is a social ill that has left no stone unturned and continues to plague the South Africa with a brutality that defies comprehension. We remain committed to making South Africa safe for women across ages, gender, sexual identities, disability, and geographic location. Honorable members and chair, the success of the gender-based violence and femicide efforts will depend on respective stakeholders moving in beyond differences, building meaningful relationships of trust, and finding ways to work together as one. With some departments having indeed heeded the call to implement and report on the progress, by that I mean we are expected to report weekly to the president on progress we're making. But all the departments are forwarding their reports. With the permission, Chair, in the next meeting, we will be naming, I'm not saying shaming, those who have not as yet come to the party, so that indeed we focus not on the double whammy pandemic of COVID-19 and gender-based violence, but like women globally focus on defeating COVID-19 as we would have defeated gender-based violence and femicide in our country. We must continue to ramp up our response to keep momentum of tackling of the scourge of gender-based violence, to show that fight against gender-based violence is everyone's fight. After all, the President, His Excellency President Ramaphosa, has said so many times, he has never come across women killing themselves or abusing themselves. It's misogyny, it's patriarchy, it's people with low esteem who really turn women into their, I don't know how to say football. Society from all walks of life has a responsibility. Men and women, particularly men, need to come to the party. We welcome all groupings, including Abosi Askulumendod. Let's make progress. The time is now. I thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much, Mr. DM.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good evening to honorable members. I had actually, Chair, not wanted to say anything, but it's just that you touch on the Umthwanuma situation that just compels me to really thank your leadership in taking the committee and the structures to that area. It's a very painful experience if you look at poverty there, ordinary people losing their daughters on a daily basis. And so we thank you for that. There has been a fragmented approach. I'm sure you've seen the NEC going, the Premier going, Minister Cele going, and some women on the day of Mashop's birthday. One word, Chair. If you go there, you see the implementation of the NSP in its totality, because the police station is there, the leaders of the community are there, faith-based structures are there, and so virtually all the pillars that the minister is talking about, you begin to match it together, and not to hear about how well police stations are functioning, but hear the voices of people. So we thank you again for bringing us closer to the real pain of GBV, and we will appreciate sharing and discussing the report. We thank you very much.
Thank you very much, PM. DG, do you want to say something before I hand over to the chairperson of the Risk and Audit Committee?
No, however, I will speak after they have presented, because there might be answers that I have to give based on their presentation.
Oh, okay, thank you very much. I would like to point to you when you make presentation that don't make it preambles and history and so on. Let's go straight to the report and discuss it, because we won't have another time to engage on the report. So we must finish today. Yeah,
sorry.
Over to you.
Chair, can I please be recognized?
Yeah,
thank you, Chair. I just wanted to find out, will we be able to engage what the Minister said after the first presentation, or how will that happen?
After which presentation? The Minister's one.
Yes, Chair, that's because I have two questions for the Minister, Chair.
No, it's fine. After the Chairperson for this committee has presented, you can engage. Okay, over to you, Chairperson. Don't take long, ne?
Okay. Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson. Am I audible?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Okay, Honorable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister and Deputy Minister, Members of the Audit and Risk Committee, the Director General, and the officials for the Department of Women, Youth and People with Disabilities. A really good evening. Chair, on a lighter note, I have been praying. This is one of my prayers for tonight, is that I don't get lost yet, you know, during the session. So I would also try to be crisp and to the point, Chairperson, just to avoid, you know, to mitigate the risk of a potential load shedding. So, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, let me introduce myself. My name is Ayanda Mafuleka, Chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee for the Department of Women, Youth and People with Disabilities. Thank you for the opportunity to brief the portfolio committee on the key challenges that have been identified by this committee, AMC, and the recommendations that we have been making to the department during the period from January to July 2020. And so, Chairperson, let me also just, stress that or emphasize that actually this presentation or this report is the continuation of the previous report that I have made to the committee. So my presentation will touch on the key challenges as well as brief also the committee, you know, the honorable members on the progress that the department has made thus far. So as the committee will be aware, the ARC, which is the Audit and Risk Committee, consists of five independent members. The last time I was, I briefed the portfolio committee on honorable chair. At that time, the ARC had only four members. So I am pleased to inform the honorable members that we have been joined by the fifth member, which then makes the committee fully constituted. I have the members of the committee that have joined in. So the five members, honorable members, Ms. Gratitude Rapaka, Ms. Tebo Kotukisi, Advocate Mary Rose, and we have one son among the roses, Mr. Ayanda Wakaba. So that is the makeup of the committee. Chair, without wasting much time, as I said, I'll try to be crisp, and I'll take it that all the members, they do have the presentation in front of them. So I will make reference to the pages if need be. So Chair, the key challenges that we have identified and also what we have been recommending to the department during the period under review. One of the challenges, and I briefed the committee on this, is also the filling of critical positions in the department. You know, that talks to the capacity issues. In my presentation, I have cited that the position of the Director General has been vacant since the 2017-18 financial year. And we are aware that management has reported that there was a directive at the time issued by the CPSA that the vacant position of the DG should not be filled at that time. In that regard, there have been officials that have been appointed to act in the Director General position. So, today we do have the permanent Director General in our midst, Advocate Maluleke. Let me also commend the Minister, for such an appointment, because the vacancy of the Director General and also having the officials acting to a certain extent, Shepherdson, was bringing a bit of an instability at a leadership level. So we do welcome the appointment of Advocate Maluleke as the DG of this department. The critical position that remains vacant is of the Director of Supply Chain Management, and this has also been raised before. And this has been vacant for the entire 2019 financial year, and actually this has resulted in a risk in the form of a lack of leadership in the supply chain management in the department, which has to a certain extent really contributed to the non-compliance of the supply chain management prescript, which has led to some of the irregular expenditure that has been incurred by the department. However, the progress that has been made so far in this regard, yes, as a committee, we have had the engagement with the DG who has made an undertaking that she will prioritize the filling of this position, because we have recommended and we have highlighted this to the department to say if this position really were to be filled. So most of the findings that have been read by the Auditor General will mostly be resolved. And then, Chairperson and honorable members, there also been a challenge during the general calendar review. Remember, this presentation talks to the period up until the 30th of July 2020, where there were still the vacancy in the core functions where the Chief Director for Monitoring and Evaluation as well as the Director Outreach, they were not yet filled. However, I am pleased to report that subsequent to end of July, especially in the month of August, these positions, they were subsequently filled. So, yes, as much as we do also recognize and acknowledge, rather, that there are still capacity issues there and there in the department, in the unit such as internal audit. But we are comfortable with the recent appointment by the department, and that I am commending the leadership of the minister in addressing those. So also another challenge on honorable chairperson has been also around the under-resourcing of the department. Obviously, this is more or less, or rather similar to the above point on the capacity. But on this one, I just want to highlight, the challenge around the financial resources, the budget. You know, this department, has been entrusted with a huge mandate. You know, they are advocating and representing, you know, the majority being women, youth, and also people with disability. But the budget that they are operating on, that they are expected to execute their mandate, is not aligned to the mandate that has been entrusted, to this department. So in essence, we are saying, they are operating under a shoestring budget. Obviously, we have made recommendations to the department in this regard, where we have recommended that the executive authority, engage the national treasury, in terms of the budget, as well as also engage the DPSA in terms of addressing the capacity issues in terms of human resources. And I mean, the department has also been updating us as a committee on the progress done thus far in engaging the National Treasury as well as the DPSA. But I think to date we are comfortable that they are in engagement that are happening, especially from the filling of vacancies front. On the next also challenge, and we have briefed the committee on on this one, but I'm just going to be a high level on the ICT issue. So we do appreciate that the department has resuscitated the functioning of its ICT governance structures, and we've seen that being presented to the committee. They have appointed the independent ICT chairperson who chairs one of the ICT strategic committee. However, the department still has challenges on the ICT infrastructure, including the information backup systems, which are not operational, as well as the managing of the ICT contract. And we're flagging this, and we're flagging this as well. To say this this challenge could still persist, or could still increase risk as a result of COVID-19, because now most of the officials may be required to work remotely from the office to manage the spread of the pandemic in the department. We have recommended to the department that they should look into the thing, the ICT strategy plans and the MTF budget to address some of those issues. As I said earlier, Chair, I am happy to report that there is a functioning of the governance structure, being the ICT strategy committee and the ICT operational committee, and management has reported, and we've seen the report from the ICT person who's independent, and indeed has come to our meeting, where they've reported their action and the assistance that they are getting from the State Information Technology Agency, CETA, to assist and to resolve some of the ICT challenges. So we do also acknowledge that there's an inadequate financial resources or even a proper budget to address some of those issues. But there have really been a progress that has been made on this front as far as the ICT is concerned. So some of those, and I mean, I am happy to report a few where we have seen that the CETA is working. The department is working together with the CETA, and they making sure that the disaster recovery environment is in place through the engagement with CETA, however, they are still, sorry, so however, the acquisition of the enabling ICT infrastructure and backup and the disaster recovery and environment will only happen in current financial year, in the 2021, because of an inadequate funding debt, you know, and the experience in the financial year. So the overall progress, Chair, it is positive in a sense that we are even, finished with update in the front, and we have, you know, pleaded with the CFO also through the acting ACG to assist in availing, you know, the budget to, you know, to this regard. And the department has also reported to us that, you know, they have budgeted for the migration for the CTAC out services in the current financial year, which then will reduce and mitigate, you know, the backup issues and the loss of data, because they will be migrating to the cloud. Chair, that takes care of the ICT challenges. And the next challenge, Chair, that we have identified that one short of brief the portfolio committee on is on the resolution of the audit findings. In my previous briefing to the PCT, I did take through the members, the honorable members, on the progress thus far last year in November. So Chair, to date, as in end of March 2020, the department had managed to resolve 73% of their findings. So AG in the 18-19 financial year had raised about 59 audit findings, of which 43 they were subsequently resolved. So, Chair, must report, though ideally, the department should have released, resolved 75, more than 75% of their audit findings. One needs to also, acknowledge a slight improvement, from the previous financial year in terms of the resolution of the audit findings. So, in this regard, there has really been, an improvement compared to the previous financial year. And I must commend the leadership of the department in this regard. However, we will still monitor, the resolution of the audit findings, because the risk is if the findings remain unresolved, the risk of them being a repeat finding and being picked up by the AG. And we have recommended to management to say one of the things they must make sure that, after the AG have finalized the audit outcome, they must move with speed in crafting, the audit action plan, which then they will have to constantly monitor. And we have said that the resolution of the audit findings should find expression and be a standing agenda item in the management meeting, where they will be monitored by the DG. And also probably cascading it down would be that managers must see to it that the audit findings in their area of responsibility is resolved with speed. And I am happy also to report that there has been an added, a layer of control in this regard, where even the solution of these findings, the progress thereof gets reported and be verified first by the internal audit before they are tabled before the audit committee, because that's also assist us in also making sure that those findings are indeed resolved. say I'm just going to move them to, you know, pass off the findings and just, you know, the NSF key challenges. I just want to highlight, rather, you know, those findings that we have closely monitored, and we, as a committee, we have seen, you know, improvement on those around the non-compliance related issues, one being the irregular expenditure. So, Chair and honorable members, the department has incurred irregular expenditure for this current financial year 2019-20 of only 2.4 million. You know, so though this amount is currently undergoing the audit by the AG, the provincial, or the rather the unaudited figure is 2.4 million. So really the committee acknowledges that the department has reduced the irregular expenditure by 40% when compared to the 4 million irregular expenditure that was incurred in the previous financial year. Well, you know, though we feel that still, you know, the 2.4 million is a bit high, because we are cognizant of that, you know, the department has identified the root cause. And I must say, in terms of the heading, identified the root cause and making sure that, you know, they address the root cause, we have seen the 40% reduction on this front check. Also, just a brief or just highlight to the honourable members on the irregular expenditure. To say for us as the committee, what we have recommended is that the internal audit as well must, you know, play an active role in this regard, as much as in this current financial year under review, we have only incurred 2.4 million, but there's still the legacy issues or the accumulated figure of about 33.8 million, you know, that comes from, you know, the prior, which the internal audit has assisted in that regard, in terms of, you know, the process of investigation into the irregular. So the progress, the internal audit has embarked on the process of investigation or determination on the irregular expenditure since the inception of this department. And, you know, services per contract workers were acquired, you know, for about 6 months to assist the internal audit with the irregular expenditure investigation. However, you know, the 6 months came, that resource, you know, had to leave. But there was the motivation subsequently that the has since been upgraded again with effect from some day in July. I think that's the business, but we really, you know, have flagged this, and this, you know, they should have some progress into finalizing this matter before, you know, it can be submitted to the National Treasury for condonation. But I do want to highlight, you know, as I highlighted earlier, that we do acknowledge, you know, that there has been really, you know, an improvement in terms of the irregular expenditure. Why I am saying that, you see that initially the 2.4 million, you know, as much as we still feel that more could be done, but it has improved. So you see that the 2.4 million consists mainly of 1.3 million, which relates to the contract that was identified as irregular in the 17-18 financial year, because the contract is still running. So then the department will still record the irregular expenditure. So not only be, you know, when I say it is the cause of what happened in the current financial year, but it is the contract that, you know, was inserted in 1718. And, you know, there is about 770,000 which relates to payment of transactions where SPM processes, they were not followed. And then the 320 of those, which is about 13%, relates to the deviation, which then I will take you through as well, which, you know, according to, you know, to the auditor general as well, they are not justifiable. And I want to stress on this and also say the deviation in its nature, it is not a wrong, you know, but I think what needs, you know, what then becomes a problem if it's not justifiable. Yes, it can be approved through the approval processes, but if it is not justifiable, for example, you know, it came about because of the lack of planning, and so then that becomes a problem. But I must say, compared to the previous financial years, you know, we've seen a drastic a reduction on the deviation on its own. So without any further, so let me then also touch on an unauthorized expenditure. I had briefed, you know, the committee also as well, and I had flagged in my last, you know, report to the portfolio committee of the potential unauthorized expenditure for the current period under review. The honourable members, they might recall that you know, the department had an unauthorized expenditure of about 20.5 million, which is roughly you know, 10 million. So the unauthorized expenditure amount consists of the 27 million, which emanated from the overspending on the vote in, you know, the prior year in 2011-12. So that is a legacy issue, and also the 2.2 million, which also emanated from the overspending per the main division within a vote in 15-16 financial year. So management really has, you know, been reporting this, and according to them, they've made an application to the Standing Committee on Public Accounts through the National Treasury, that is COPA, for the condonement of the unauthorized expenditure. So the department is still waiting the feedback from the National Treasury. So, and they have recommended from time to time that they should be the follow-up. And I know that, you know, the then acting DG really, you know, and tries to push this matter so that it could be resolved. But, Chair, Honourable Chairperson, the progress, you know, that far is that, you know, this matter has not been resolved. However, management reported to our committee that follow-up they've been made with SOPA through National Treasury, and they are waiting for the response, you know, on the condonement from SOPA. And there was, I think management also did report to us that in the 2019 financial year, SOPA had scheduled a meeting to consider an authorized expenditure of the department. However, you know, the meeting was subsequently cancelled. So, Chair, in that regard, that is the legacy issue on unauthorized expenditure. Only in the current financial year, 1920, the department has incurred an additional unauthorized expenditure of about 3.6 million in the main division within the vote. The expenditure emanated from the overspending on the compensation of employees and the goods and services. So as the committee, because this also becomes a non-compliance, we have advised management then to explain the possible overspending to the National Treasury and request additional funding on the compensation of employees to try to circumvent this. However, you know, the National Treasury was approached, but you know, they could not provide additional funding to the department. So in the unaudited
annual financial statement, you know, the department has recorded the additional unauthorized expenditure of about 3.6 million. So the cause really of the 3.6 million that has been incurred in the financial year under review is because of the new function in ministry that was introduced as part of the reconfiguration, you know, through the NMOC process. And also, this was also as a result of the payment for loss of office gratuity for former minister as a member of parliament. So, Chair management, then they will have to, you know, look into this and then also submit this additional unauthorized expenditure to be condoned by SCOPA. However, you know, management, they said that if unauthorized expenditure is not condoned by SCOPA, then the department would have to offset the unauthorized expenditure against its allocated budget, then which would result in the reduced budget for its operation. Moving on then to another challenge, which are also it is on the information, rather performance information. On this one, Chair, really firstly, let me, you know, comment the department on the progress, you know, and also rather the improvement on the performance information. We, as a committee, we are aware that though, you know, the AEG had not raised any material findings, you know, on the reported performance information in the previous, you know, for the financial year, because though it did not, but the department, they were required at the time to make adjustments on their performance information. So this has also been the area that we have been closely monitoring, you know, throughout the financial year, where we have recommended to the department to make sure that they develop and implement, you know, procedures to ensure that their strategic plan and the annual performance plan are complied in accordance with the government planning prescript, and also, you know, some awareness that is created among the program managers, you know, to make sure that, you know, quality assurance processes, they are enforced even for quarterly and annual reporting. That will then, you know, assist in mitigating any material adjustments or any findings by the AG on their performance information, you know, that they report on the annual report. I must say, you know, there's been a vast progress on this, because the findings that they were raised around, you know, the department having to review their policy on performance information and also develop the SOP around the performance information, that has been implemented. Also, I commend, you know, management in that regard. So we have looked and reviewed the annual performance for 2019-20, and that was submitted to the AG. So AG is yet to review that, you know, annual report or rather the performance in, information. So just on this one, I would like to keep it as a challenge because of, you know, the material adjustment that has to be, material correction that has to be made. But I think, you know, as somebody should say, you know, we were comfortable, or we are comfortable as the committee, you know, and towards the submission to the AG for the 1920, and we have mentioned that you know, internal audits, they also assist us in verifying and reviewing, you know, the performance information before it is submitted to the AG. Lastly, Chair, lastly but not least, on the this is just now the progress to date on the annual financial statement that the department has also, you know, submitted to the AG for the audit, and the financial annual financial statement, the
they were simultaneously, which a mass command, management under the leadership of the minister, and also the CMO team as well, because they found themselves where they have to prepare the annual financial statement under difficult circumstances where they were working remotely under the lockdown restrictions. Yes, we do acknowledge the difficulties that the department struggled a bit to produce and complete the annual financial statement to submit to us on time, and though subsequently we were comfortable the financial statements that were subsequently submitted to the AG, they were complete. Obviously, Chair, we are hoping that they will stand the test of the audit. We have to sit on about two meetings just to review and play oversight on the annual financial statement and also the annual report, though they were subsequently submitted on time. So we also commend management on that. However, we did recommend to say going forward, and we have also been recommending this, to say they really need to revisit their timeline and make sure that they talk to the timeline development and production of the annual financial statement. Chairperson, I shall really pause there. This is just the last key challenge which emanated the results, rather the results of the pandemic, COVID-19, where we had as a committee, because we are also charged playing oversight on the risk management the function, where we have identified the challenge that the department needs to have a COVID-19 plan that the department has not yet finished to the ARC for us to be able to play oversight on the impact of the COVID-19 on the operations of the department from the risk perspective. So we are we are hopeful that the DG will assist us in that regard, so that the ARC can be favored with such a plan. Basically, we find ourselves that the risks have changed, and they are the risks that have been brought by the COVID-19. Chairperson, I shall pause there and thank you so much. Take care of the report by the Audit and Risk Committee. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Can I get that? Any clarity speaking questions, honorable members? Because I don't see your hands.
Chair, raise my hand with this hand function over here.
Chair, my hand is supposed to raise, but I don't have the option of raising hand on the app.
Honorable
Ngobo, Chairperson.
Honorable Ngobo. That order.
Chair to me.
Banner for my.
Late. I don't have any network in my side. So I'm lost and I know nothing. I don't
have
yes, Chairperson.
Honorable Songo, you want to speak?
Yes, Chair.
Oh, okay, you are the last. Okay, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good evening, colleagues. Chairperson, I just have two questions for the minister. I hope the minister is still online. The first one is, until when is the deadline for the nominations to the council extended to? I know that the advert was sent out on the 31st of August. That was a couple of weeks ago. But I just want to find out what the actual date is of the deadline, what's the last day of submission. Nominations on the council. And then Minister spoke about the monitoring and evaluation plan that has been completed and ready to be implemented. Minister, I just want to find out if we can have a copy of that MME plan, because the role of our committee essentially is to also play a second oversight role. Not only the department, not only the CGE, but also the National Council on Gender-Based Violence. Right? So I think it's important for us as the committee to also be privy to this information, and if we can please have that. My last question goes to AG. AG, thank you so much for your presentation. But I just wanted to find out, I wanted to find out why are the resolutions by the audit findings, why is the department slow?
Honorable.
Thank you, Chip.
You know what? I don't know why are you asking questions regarding the council, because there's a presentation on the council. And
yes,
Chair, there's a presentation on the NSP, which I think all the things in relation to NSP, the council, will want the department to respond to all those questions holistically, because when we get there, now we'll be asking what from their presentation. What I want us to do, maybe let's deal with the presentation from the chairperson of the audit and risk committee, and then after that one, then we deal with the one of NSP and the council, so that they give us the full report and then ask questions.
Sure, Chairperson. I absolutely understand your argument, and I will accept it. However, the minister did speak about this, and we should have the opportunity to engage on what the minister said. But I do accept what you're saying.
Yeah, no, the minister is here. She won't leave to finish the meeting. Unless minister tells us that she's going to leave early, then we can allow the minister to respond to the question, because I'm afraid that if we deal with things that are related to the NSP and the council, and then when they do the presentation, we'll be, I don't know. Minister, you'll be here until you finish. Or you'll want to respond. Allow members to ask you questions. Relation to your presentation.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. The meeting is still on, and I have not indicated otherwise, so I will speak first.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, honorable members, let's stick to the presentation of the Risk and Audit Committee first, and thereafter we allow the department to present the next report so that we can finish everything today. Honorable Sheriff. Okay. I have already noted what you have raised now in relation to NSP and the council. But let's start with the Audit and Risk Committee report. Okay. Let's go to the next honorable member.
Thank you very much, Chair, and a very good evening to the department as well as fellow honorable members. Chair, the first thing that I'd just like to say is that, you know, I was very deeply encouraged by the newly appointed DG of the department, particularly by how she spoke to and understood the current issues that are currently unfolding in the department. And I think the responses that we were able to receive as a committee on the matters we were raising at the committee were very important. And so I think it's very encouraging to see that things are starting to change and the promise of change is something that is on the horizon. So I just wanted to note that and to also appreciate the DG for thoroughly engaging us and answering our questions. But further to that, Chair, to also thank our team as well from our own committee. Sorry, Chair, they don't want to speak to you. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. Just to continue from where I left off, to state that really some of these things require a lot of work and also require a lot of commitments and action-orientated steps, which brings me, Chair, to the questions that I do have for the presentation that we just received. And also thank you so much for that presentation to the EG. But I want to say that there's just a few things that are concerning me in regards to what we've heard today and also just reading the report itself. You know, last year when we had a presentation from the RC, the supply chain management processes of the department were flagged as being problematic. And one of the reasons that they were flagged, we were told that there was no director of SCM within the department. Therefore, that meant that issues of deviations, issues of irregular expenditure, issues of fruitless expenditure, etc., were happening in the department on the basis that there was no director of SCM that was within that position. But however, if I remember correctly, it was decided in November already that there must be terms of reference that must be put together by the department, particularly speaking to the SCM process, and that all officials within the department must be made aware of these processes. Now, the terms of reference is a secondary measure because Treasury guidelines already tells us how a deviation is approved, how the SCM process that is existed or that is put in place within a department can be deviated by the department itself. And so ultimately, the signing off of these budgets or of all these monies that are being signed off is signed off by the accounting officer. And so my question to the EJ and the presentation we just received is that where there is a lack of consequence management, we cannot say that the department has improved if they have not actually come back to us with the outcomes of the investigations that have taken place to find out why those processes were done in the manner that they were, why certain expenses were incurred regularly, and why were certain expenditures done in a way that is not approved by treasury guidelines, that is not approved by the supply chain management process of the department. Right. And so I want to know, if we are not going to request consequence management from the department and merely to just compliment the department to say that they've improved without the requisite action being taken, then I do think that's very problematic. And so I would like to know, from the recommendations that were made last year by the ARC report to the department, particularly on consequence management, how exactly has the ARC been able to identify the improvements if, in fact, there's been no outcomes on these investigations, there's been no consequence management on some of these issues? Second to that, Chair, I just want to also say that I was also thanking the team of our committee for sending questions to the department and for the department to respond, because those questions and answers that we received from them were very important. Now, one of the answers that we received from the questions that were submitted on behalf of the committee was that it was, in fact, the accounting officer at the time that was responsible for these exorbitant amounts of monies that we've seen that have either been, done irregularly or deviations been approved outside the processes of the SCM or the Treasury guidelines. And so what type of action has been taken to the accounting officer who approved and signed those particular requests and quotations that were made by the department? That's my second question. And then also, on the condonement of these funds or the condonement of the expenditure that we were speaking about, it's good and well to ask for condonement when you are agreeing to the fact that the processes in the department were not up to standard. And therefore, you are asking Treasury to do a condonement. But we cannot do a condonement if there is no self-correcting within the department. So how do the department apply for a condonement if, in fact, there's been no self-correction, there's been no action and disciplinary that has taken place? So I just wanted to get some clarity when you mentioned that, because I think it's very important. On the terms of reference, have those terms of reference been done by the department? I know that the DG in the last meeting spoke about how there will be a training that will be done for officials in order for no official to be able to give an excuse that they didn't know the procedure. And as far as I'm aware, the procedure is it's clearly outlined and articulated within our own legislation. It's articulated within Treasury. And so these are things that should be known by officials within the department. And if they are not known by officials within the department, surely senior management, directors at a high level, are well aware of what constitutes a deviation that can be approved, what constitutes a deviation that cannot be approved, what constitutes irregular expenditure, and what is not irregular expenditure. So I don't believe or accept that at a director's level, officials still require training on how to understand deviation and how deviation should work. And so in as much as the presentation welcomes the fact that there's been a decrease of 40% of wasteful expenditure within the department. That still does not excuse the fact that we have not seen proper outcomes as to the people who approved these particular expenditures and approved them incorrectly, who approved these deviations. And so I just want to receive that clarity on those three main questions from you, Eddie, and also from Deep, because I think some of the questions also touch on some of the things that you said in self-correcting the department in the last meeting. I'll stop there for now, Chair. Thank you very much.
No, thank you, Chair. Good evening, honorable members, Minister and Deputy Minister. Let me welcome the presentation by the committee. But however, honorable Chair covered me on the two questions on the irregular expenditure and the unauthorized expenditure, because one wanted to understand that where, because I've read the document as presented, that the department is exploring filling the position of the director of the supply chain management. So my question then to the committee was that when should the committee expect that report, whether the position has been filled or not? But other issues have been covered by Honorable Mushiti. And secondly, Chair, on the ICT infrastructure and commissioning, I've heard the presenter speaking about the independent authority. I'm not sure whether I've heard it correctly. So my question was that if then there are officials in the department and then there is an independent authority to deal with ICT infrastructure and information backup, is it not an outsourcing of responsibilities to the department? What is it that they are doing? You know, because I want to understand their responsibility of the independent authority. Because I know I think up on the report that there is having challenges in terms of the ICT infrastructure and information backup, and not operational as well as the ICT contract management, which are not being managed. What is then the responsibility of the independent authority as far as ICT infrastructure and information backup? Because for me, in terms of what we've been presented by the department in the previous portfolio committees, we were also, you know, against outsourcing of responsibilities. So if I can get, if I can be clarified by the committee on the independent authority, but how on the issues of the expenditure
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also join Honorable Members who spoke before me in appreciating the presentation. Firstly, the inputs by the Minister and the Deputy Minister, and also the Chairperson of the Audit Committee and Risk. My question would be for the Chairperson of the Audit Committee. You know, Chairperson, departments will always wait until the financial year ends to make sure that their finances or their reports are in order, so that the AG, when he audits their books, then they get a better audit opinion. But then I would like to question the Chairperson, how regularly do they go to the department to ensure that some of the issues that they raise as the audit committee, the risk that they identify in the department. That would mean that the department will get an opinion from the AG. How often do they have the meetings with the department to ensure that they stick to the recommendation that they make? Because I think as the audit committee, there are some things that they identify as they go to the department. So I would like to know how often do they have those meetings? And as a committee, can we be furnished with the report after the audit committee has a meeting with the department, so that we can also make sure that we follow up the department to ensure that they rectify some of the identified mistakes that the audit committee has identified in the department? And also maybe to say to the department, it's good because now they have tried to fill some of the vacant positions. But I'm not sure whether all the vacant positions have been filled, or it's only the DG position that has been filled. If not, then the audit committee, I think, because the presenter was, some of the things they identified is that most of the vacant positions, especially in the FAUD, made the department to get some irregular expenditures and unauthorized expenditure. So I just want to find out if most of the vacant positions, especially the ones that they advertised and they were interviewed on last month, is that July, I think so, have they filled all those positions, or are they still in the process of filling those positions? Otherwise, I would like to thank the audit committee to make this a report available to us. It's an eye-opening report, and I think if we are going to work hand in hand with the audit committee and together with the department, this department will get a clean audit. And also, because we are not only interested in audit in clean audit, but the performance, people out there should get a good service from our government. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Lambelayo. Nilambelane, omunye mangaqeda omunye alandele.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is on the Department of ICT, and I know that the Director General might be the one who's going to answer, but it's something that has also been mentioned by the Audit Committee. So the Department of ICT seems to be always having problems, including challenges on the information paper system. So I'd like to know, when is the department going to resolve all the ICT challenges and make sure that their ICT infrastructure is fully functional? And it would be helpful if the Director General can also give us clarity on the current status of their ICT. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, Elena. Yes, okay. Hello. Chairperson.
We have a mom call.
Honorable. No, I'm not here. I think yes, Oza, we should be, I mean, you booze, everything's a booze. It has been a Kurumanga, your Kumes, and
ngoba ezinye zezinkinga lezifuneka sibhekene nazo kakhulu.
That we have to face or to deal with.
Okay, Tolika lo. Ya into engikhala ngayo la minister
minister.
First number one, if maungabe ukhuluma ngabaholi bendabuko,
traditional
leader, na baphathi beyinkonzo, nabo abanye futhi ebecela ukuthi nabo babe yiphathi
kumasikhulu
esibona luya lidlondlobala
likakhulukazi.
Because my life is in the home of the Lord, but since
we are challenged,
there is a challenge.
We also need to look at the issues to the minister.
We human rights. I
that the internal audit, you know, they will do and finalize and bring to the internal and then bring to the committee, the ARC committee, which then will also go to the executive or you know, executive authority, will have, you know, all the steps in terms of what happened and who's responsible, which then there will be recommendation on the consequence management, you know, before it can also, you know, be, you know, the irregular expenditure be condoned by the national treasury. So I, the member, honorable member, PT asked, you know, the question on, you know, where is the improvement? Let me just, you know, clarify in the introduction, say as a committee, you know, we do acknowledge and we have flagged this to the committee and also management that irregular expenditure has been incurred in the previous financial year, which is a legacy issue. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the accumulation from the financial year 2011-12. So the improvement that we are citing as a committee, one, it is on the control environment that has slightly improved, you know, which then has not resulted in the, you know, in the irregular expenditure, rather that has resulted in the 40% reduction in the current financial year, you know, due to the, you know, control environment that has improved, and also close monitoring also by this committee, also and management, where then we have seen irregular expenditure, you know, reducing, but we are not saying, you know, then, you know, we are not playing this service to the irregular expenditure that still needs to be resolved, that dates back to the financial year. Also, I might not have said this in the presentation earlier, Honorable Peter, that, you know, the improvement on the control environment, we've seen it also resulting in the no fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the current financial year 2019. So the members, they might report that the department had recorded about 1.3 million in you know, of fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the previous year. In the current under they is none. So those are just some of the improvements, but we are not saying that the department, you know, I mean, is there yet. So even in my report, I said we acknowledge the improvement, but still feel that you know, the 2.4 million, you know, that you know, that has come through in the current financial year is still high. So the DG will then also come in on the consequent management, because that is still, you know, the process that is underway in terms of addressing and also the investigation on the irregular expenditure. So I'm not going to talk to the question number two around the type of action that has been taken against the accounting officer, and you know, probably the honourable minister can talk to that. But also as well, let me emphasise that, you know, that process is still underway. When that report, then we will know, you know, and then who's responsible and how then that will, you know, be dealt with before it can go to the National Treasury. In terms of the terms of reference, you know, the DG can talk to that question. Maybe can just respond to that. Honorable Chair, I forgot to mention that I'm striking a bit because I have been Lord Chair. It seems like my prayer was not answered. So I'm trying to read, you know, some of the questions that have been posed by the honorable members. Let me also just talk to the question that was raised by the honorable member on the ICT with regards to the independent authority. Let me just quickly explain here that probably
you know, the member might not have, you know, might have missed, you know, the presentation. When I talk about the governance structures that are operational, or rather that are functioning in the ICT, I was talking about there are two committees, the ICT Strategic Committee and the ICT Steering Committee. Those committees, they are established because of the DPSA, you know, ICT governance framework. So one committee, the ICT Strategic Committee, it has been chaired by an independent, person, not an authority. That is not, that function is not outsourced. Actually, the chairperson of that committee is an ICT specialist from one of the departments. You know that the department has requested to chair, you know, this committee, this ICT committee. But the makeup of this committee is still, you know, the officials of the department. So this committee, it is a sort of like plays a strategic expansion, you know, on the ICT matters in the department. And this committee then reports to the ARC committee, and then we do get the report from the independent chairperson, you know, and to the ARC committee. So remember, this committee is more or less, you know, the chairperson is more or less, you know, similar to myself, because I'm also an independent chairperson of this ARC committee. I am not employed by the department, but I am not, responsible for the operation or the running of the department, same as the independent chairperson of the ICT Strategic Committee. So it is just on the independent side. So the functions, they are not outsourced. Yes, we have highlighted and recommended to management on some of the challenges, you know, that are in the ICT. And we do acknowledge, you know, capacity issues, you know, in that department, because that the ICT department has only three personnel, being the director and just two junior technicians. So, so this committee, they do assist, you know, with the IT expertise for the department to be able to address those challenges. Then the honourable member, I'm not sure if it was honourable member, not in PC. Anyway, there was a question on how regularly do the ARC, meet and then go to the department, how many meetings that we have. Basically, we, you know, as per our charter, we sort of like meet on a quarterly basis as, the committee. During the period under review, we have met, six times. We met in February, we met in March, in June, July, and there were two meetings in July. So basically, we do meet regularly, and then we consider, you know, some of these issues, and we recommend to the department. And also we monitor even, you know, the to check if our recommendations, they are, you know, implemented. Chairperson, I do take note of the request by the committee that through the honourable member that this committee, they would like to be favoured with the report of the ARC after each meeting. Yes, we do, produce a quarterly report, as the ARC, probably then through the DG and the CAE and the department, probably those reports would be finished, the portfolio committee would be finished with those reports. Chair, I will, the other question on, on the ICT, when will, you know, the ICT challenges being resolved. I will leave that, I will hand over that to the DG. I think I have responded to some of the questions, but yeah, that I have not responded to, I will probably request maybe the DG to respond to. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Chairperson. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Honorable Members, and the Chairperson of the ARC. I'll go straight to responding to questions, and those that I might have left out, I'll request the CFO and the internal audit also to respond to that. The first issue that was referred to by Honorable Kitty is the SCM problem, the management of SCM, because we do not have a SCM director, which results in deviations, irregular expenditures, and fruitless expenditure. And he also wanted to know whether we have developed the terms of reference for SCM. We had not yet appointed an SCM director. However, we are in the process of transferring an SCM director from DPME. Fortunately for us, someone wrote to the department and requested to transfer to the department, and we were happy to accept that transfer. So and most probably from the 1st of October, we will be having a director SCM. Consequence management in terms of the deviations, irregular expenditure, fruitless expenditure. Also, the chairperson referred to that our internal audit is busy conducting investigations. However, yesterday I issued a compliance instruction because some of the culprits do not want to comply. They would use their right to silence and indicate that their attorneys have instructed them not to respond. So the compliance instruction requires them to comply and respond to the questions and allow to be interviewed. If they refuse, then that means they indirectly indicate that they are at fault. They accept the blame. So we will therefore have to initiate the disciplinary processes. About the accounting officer, that is part of the internal audit investigation because it lists each and every person who was responsible, the person who initiated, the person who signed, the person who allowed up until the accounting officer, all the processes in, and all the authorities involved, they have to respond to the internal audit. So all of them will have to account in terms of their role. And then there was also a question about condonement of the unauthorized expenditure. I think it's more over expenditure rather than unauthorized because of the award that was given to the minister, the previous minister, but also I think others is because of the new office, the deputy minister, which is unfunded by the national treasury. So it is allowed by the PFMA after the internal audit had investigated that there was no malice, they would then recommend that the accounting officer should apply to the National Treasury for condonement. For example, where National Treasury didn't give us the funds for the office of the deputy minister, it's inevitable that we will overspend, and then we can be able to apply for condonement in that instance. However, this doesn't apply to irregular expenditures that were that occurred at the instance of officials who did not follow
a certain procedure. So there's a difference between these two in terms of which one is condoned or which one is not condoned. Also, there was a question about whether we have the terms of reference in the finance. We have the financial instructions that are aligned to the national treasury national instructions. On the issue of the ITC, the chairperson has already indicated that we are already working with CETA. And CETA has also allocated someone to assist me as a director general, so that because I'm not an ICT expert, I'm an advocate. So some of the ICT things, you might sign the contract and only to find that some of the information is not correct. So ICT has allocated someone who will assist in terms of when we look at the tenders that are coming or whatever procurement process, so that before I sign, I call them and say, yay, this is what they say we require. Can I sign here or not? So we are definitely managing the contracts within the ICT, but also we are in the process of migrating to CETA, because we are migrating to cloud services, which is CETA services. CETA has allocated us five servers, and they will be managing our information, so that there's dignity in our information management processes. Honorable Maluleke requested that the audit report be made available. Yes, we will make the reports available. Also, she referred to filling of the post and those that have been interviewed. As indicated, that the SCM director were in the process. However, I am not sure whether the committee is aware that the National Treasury is in the process of cutting compensation of employees' budget. From this year's budget, they've already cut 6.something million. Now, yesterday, they told us yesterday that they are cutting, but for the next 3 years, they are going to cut even further. So now we are in the process of looking at how do we, or which post are we going to be able to appoint that when they make further cuts next year, we are not going to end up with over expenditure on compensation employees. And as we were negotiating with them, because we met with them on Monday, and we tried to negotiate that don't cut employees because we're already understaffed, maybe cut goods and services, and they informed us that they are going for compensation of employees because they want to reduce personnel bills in government. And what they told us was, we have five options if we can't operate within the budget card. Either we should encourage early retirement or ensure that there's natural retirement. Those that are at the age of retirement, we must encourage them to retire. And then natural attrition. Natural attrition, that means don't fill the post that you have now. The other one was transfer your people. If you can't work within what you have, transfer your people to other departments. The other one was, if you still can't function, retrench, then you'll have to look at retrenchment. So and I think this is a serious challenge that we're also asking the committee to assist us in terms of negotiating for a better deal, because they've already cut to the bone. Now they are drawing from the marrow. Because if they take what they're taking now, for the next, besides what they've cut this year, they are going to cut 2021, 2022 further, and then 2022, 2023 further, 2023 to 2024. So all government departments are going to remain with lean departments. So before we fill all the posts, we need to work out, so that next year, not even next year, 2024, we must be within that smallest budget that we will have. So maybe that is the challenge that we're still trying to work on. HRM is working on that. They are calculating so that we don't end up with a negative expenditure on compensation of employees. I'm not sure if there's anything that I have left, but I think I've answered questions that were asked. Apart from the questions of Honorable Makaula, because we'll respond to them when we discuss the NFT. I'm not sure if the CFO have left anything that he wants to refer to, and both from internal audit. CFO, you can come in quickly if I've left anything.
Thank you, Honorable Member, Chief Minister and Deputy Minister. DG, I think you've covered the issue around the terms of reference. We refer to it as a financial instruction note that was developed last year in March for implementation during 2019-20 financial year. We have since reviewed the instruction note and was also tabled during the Mancon meeting that was held during this week, and subsequently the accounting officer did sign the financial instruction note. In addition to the financial instruction note, the department also developed a policy during 2019-20 financial year, a policy and procedure on unauthorized, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and management attended a training that was conducted by National Treasury on unauthorized, irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Those are the tools that we implemented to cap the increase of irregular expenditure in the department. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Can we go to the next presentation?
Okay.
No, Chairperson. No, ngibuze nganga angisazokuhlehlisa kakhulu. Ngisafuna ukwazi. Yazi imali isebenza kanjani engekho umuntu otorazile. Ubani lo okwazi ukuthi siphume imali. Babengilandela. Iyanda lama unauthorized expenditure. Ukuthi ngavele plan nje uya
increasing.
Unauthorized expenditure. Ukuthi kwenzeka kanjani? isuelo mali yapi izo akamkela kanjani leyo mali ukuthi imalini ibiyapi ngasikhathi ngoba asikwazi labo bantu abalokhu bakhona imali than ezophuma ngale uncontorize
finishes.
Titi?
Sorry.
Titi?
Yes, the unauthorized expenditure after the investigation that is being conducted by the National Audit, some people will be charged, some will be required to pay. However, some of the unauthorized expenditure could have been used for programs within the department, but they didn't follow the correct procedures. That one could be maybe normalized by following certain processes that the PFMA allows. So there will be different actions on different transactions depending on the network load shedding just happened, but I think you can hear me now. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, proceed, DJ.
Okay, load shedding just happened. Load shedding is going to go in the gala mind. Hello? Yeah, but you can hear me. As I was saying, that it will depend on the transaction itself, where people, it was just a corrupt act, not an unauthorized expenditure where somebody was doing the work of the department, but they didn't follow process. I'm not sure if Malcolm is answered.
Titi, we are left with only 20 minutes. May you proceed to the next presentation?
Thank you, Chair. Uthi kwenzeka ngokuthi mhlambe omunga zange kwalandelwa umthetho ukuthi kusetshenziswe lezo mali. So ngabe niyabona ubungozi bokusebenza kwimali engazange kwalandelwa i-procedure na? Why isikhala kule portfolio kuney'nkinga ey'ningi engakwazi ukuthi zenzeke ahluleko
ku-achieveuzophelani
le nto yokusebenziswa kwey'mali ebengafanele zisebenze zisebenza ngendlela okungalandeli kusho ukuthi la ngamanye amazwi
kukamazezele.
Thank you. Chairperson, DDG Shoki Tabalala will present. DDG Shoki, can we please?
Okay. Honorable Chair, I am expecting our colleague, Ms. Bongima Palweni, to assist us and fly the presentation so that it's projected and shared on the screen. Madam Bongi? Ms. Bongi, are you there?
Hello, DDG, yes, I'm sharing.
Okay, thank
you. It will take a little bit of time, yeah.
All right. Honorable Chair, the whip of the Portfolio Committee, honorable members, Minister, Deputy Minister, and fellow colleagues from the department, good evening. I'm going to really be galloping on this presentation in the interest of time. You have flighted the wrong presentation. This one is a strategic plan. We need the one on progress for the NSP bonds. Let's see whether we can use this one. Okay. Can you see this one?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll do it from my side. Sorry for that. Chair, I won't be talking to the background, and I will skip this side. You're familiar with it in terms of the pillar, and Minister spoke to that. We had a presentation the other day on that. This one, Chair, I would like to indicate that it's mainly around localizing prevention services, but making sure that this becomes our game changer. We are acknowledging that we are fixing the plane as it's flown, but this requires strengthened partnership as well as between government and social partners as we leverage on replicating what works, and that is evidence-based. On this next slide, Chair, these are mechanisms and systems in place to implement and report on progress that we are making. We've adapted a participatory and multi-sectoral approach. We have a pillar-based kind of interim technical task team, which with government and civil society coming together and reporting on a weekly basis. But we are also engaging government and civil society organizations on the actual work that they're doing on the NSP. In this instance, we develop clear plans on how each pillar we're implementing, but also we provide weekly progress reports the president. Here we are demonstrating our mechanism and systems that we have put in place as we implement and report on progress. This part of the document demonstrates the collaborative implementation methodology between us as well as government. We're working through the interim technical task teams that are more volunteer driven, and we develop work plans and we make updates during this period, on a weekly basis. These are the reports that we feed to the presidential report, which is a combination of what comes from civil society and what comes from government reported to the presidential weekly report, but also the kind of work that we are doing feeds into a South Africa gender-based violence and femicide heat map, which I will talk to it in the next slide. Then on progress, Chair, on pillar one, which is mainly around accountability and coordination issues, we've already convened IMC meetings, Minister Leadership Act. We've established technical task teams, which met almost three times, intergovernmental technical task teams. We've had bilateral meetings with COCTA, DPME, SSA, and with COCTA, we addressed the issue of how we interface or we infuse gender-based violence and femicide intervention programs within the district model, from institutional mechanisms to programmatic interventions. We're working with DPME on this instance, but we've developed that framework that Minister has reported to. And we had a bilateral with SSA. Here we are addressing the issue of data, how we can work together to improve the challenges that we are facing with data, but also the plan that we have around addressing the issue of prevalence data. We already are reaching out various faucets and clusters of government. We've already made a presentation to one of the governance structures, but that on its own is helpful, Chair, in the sense that since we've written to DG, he has given us the permission to present to all the clusters as and when they meet, so that we give them an update of our performance, but we also make them aware of our challenges, specific expectations on what we expect from the Director General. In terms of CSO engagement, from this interim technical task team, we already have up to 32 civil society organizations, as well as research institutional representatives that are part of this technical team that are working with us in making sure that we come up with implementation plans that seek to translate the 6 pillars of NSP into practice. We've consulted on the National Council. We've had tons of reference and selection criteria issues already being addressed. And also the interim technical task team is working hard in popularizing the gender-based violence and femicide national plan at this level. And these are volunteers who are heeding the call to the part where we say we harness all in terms of our response to GBV. These are some of the structures that we've been reporting to. We'll take the next one, which is also when we had a webinar society on the issue of the council, they requested that we extend the deadline. We all agreed that the deadline is extended for a period of 3 months. But even though that is the case, there's still some back office work that is happening underway where we are revisiting the draft legislation of setting up the council that we once crafted earlier on at some point during the hearing process. And now we are working on it to make sure that at a point when the legislation issue is actually required, in the event we finalize that part, then we are ready, we are not far from wanting. On the issue of the council itself, I need to indicate that yes, there was a recommendation that there be an establishment of the IMC that will play a key facilitation role in establishing the council processes. Due to the urgency, the process of legislating the council be considered by the IMC, that was the reason, and to strengthen the communication strategy on these issues, but we've indicated how often we've met. There was an advert on the terms of reference and selection criteria that was also discussed by the IMC. And concurrently, we are registering a trust with the master court so that we move in a manner that will assist us to deal with this issue of formalizing the council. But also, we are working quite closely with National Treasury on the funding model of the council itself. We scheduled virtual meetings with civil society after we had the IMC meeting, and these processes will still be resuscitated soon with civil society on our current strategic pressure on matter. We continue again on pillar to say current, there are efforts at this point to integrate the national strategic plan in terms of its targets within our annual performance plan at various government departments. Also requested them that as they do the alignment to their ATP, their annual performance plan, that they also reprioritize within their baseline to ensure that plans are resourced, the plans can be implemented. They're cognizant of the fact that there's COVID-19 and that there are financial constraints as a result of the impact of COVID-19, but we have made it a point to put our case across that issues that relate to gender-based violence and femicide should not be on the periphery. We submit weekly reports to the president. Up until now, we have almost half of the government departments now reporting, and those that are struggling to report, we are arranging that we reach out to them on a one-on-one basis and take them through the process for them to understand. Also, we've presented to the governance cluster and the social cluster to the DGs. It's pleaded to them that they must also allow us not only for this process, for the planning of the next financial year in terms of their annual performance plans and going forward, but they invite us to their strategic plans to be then engage them and elevate issues that are relevant to this department in line with their core business and their mandate for those issues included in their plans. We are engaging National Treasury around the issue of costing, and this is work that's currently underway. On the prevention pillar, the GBVF and creative initiatives are in progress. We are focusing on social behavioral change interventions that seek to shift attitudes and behaviors from move away from masculinities, toxic masculinities, making sure that society is free of such toxic masculinities and women are and free in their own categories. But we've seen initiatives like SANAC and SECTA that hosted a virtual national men's dialogue discussing issues that are affecting men nationally. We have seen the GSD virtual dialogue, but also faith-based organizations that are coordinating their efforts to implement preventive measures on gender-based violence. In some of these instances, they are supported by development partners like UN Women, the Center for Gender Justice, South African Council of Churches. So we are beginning to see everybody coming to the party, playing their part. And it's good that churches are also coming through, because most of the violence, you've seen it arising from that sector as well. Basically, started working on gender transformed early childhood development curriculum and the boy children. And I do feel this is a strategic move for that. Because even in groups, they say, this is a man. We've had a finalization of radio stations on violence prevention, and all of those extracted a lot around comprehensive sexuality education. The department and GCIF have been sharing daily key messages on GBVF, but also we've had two interactive radio talk shows connected over 70 community radio stations led by the Department of Justice, discussing and unpacking the three GBV bills and the court support services for GBV survivors. That has been an ongoing process throughout the period of August. And three live chats on social media platforms on domestic violence services. If you look at the, we have had a webinar on a victim support survivor-centric justice system as government, but we've also made sure that ESD, together with civil society, in particular CSVR, that they held a thematic live webinar that focused on human trafficking services, but also they started putting messages on their social media platform on services that are available, how those services can be accessed, and where those services can be accessed. And webinar was held in collaboration with NEDLAC on the ratification of the International Labour Organization, which is Convention 190, and this one seeks to talk on the issue of violence in the workplace and sexual harassment. We are playing an advocacy role, we are lobbying for ratification of this convention. These are the pillars on justice. These are the three bills that have already been approved by cabinet that are now in parliament. The next ones are the bills that are still pending but also have gone through either portfolio committee or select committee. They are listed there. Some of the bills are in the next slide, are also listed there. They've been approved as well by cabinet but also adopted by select committee, and some of them are also going to be part of NCOP publish process. Again, these ones are led mainly by social development as well as justice, the victim support services bill. There's been a period of extension up until September for public comments, but also the issue of development of the phase 3 of to number 6 of the femicide watch, which we can talk to, and draft code of good practice on the prevention and elimination of violence and harassment at world of work. This one has already been published to the public, and we played a critical role in making comments, but also interfacing this draft code of good practice with the NSP, but also with the ILO Convention 190. Under the justice pillar, Chair, we are giving a sense of the conviction rate, the sentencing rate, what we have done as government in ensuring that we upgrade and we resource the sexual offences force that we have. If given the numbers, you can see conviction rates in GBV matters managed by the Chitizela Cancer Centers was up to 70.2, but also we are gradually dealing with sexual offenses. We had 235 cold cases that were investigated. Out of that, 76 of the cases were reinstated for prosecution. 6 Chitizela Care Centers are being established, but also we are hard in ensuring that those that are working with children, particularly the organization called SAFE, which is the South African organization that is dealing with educators, is vetting the teachers that are going to be employed from the statute against the national the sexual register on offenses. There's further progress around NPA, where we are demonstrating that TTCs render services to so many victims that there is a high likelihood that the reduction is due to the lockdown of regulations. There's a feeling that there was a decrease during this period of quarter one in terms of people accessing the TTCs, and it is attributed to the fact that we had a lockdown at that time, you will recall the services were not classified as committed services, nor essential services, but we are beginning to see an improvement in utilization and accessing of these centers now that we are in level three, I mean, the level two of the risk strategy. If you look at the pillar four under response, care, support, and healing, which is led by social development, with SAPS and other relevant departments supporting it, we are aware that Solidarity Fund approved 17 million funding for initiatives of GBV-related activities. Resource the GBV Command Center again. They've made it a point that they're resourcing it, but also that there is money that was assigned to the National Development Agency, which is also an implementing partner for the CSOs. This money that was given to the NDA was actually from the CARA, which stands for the Criminal Asset Recovery Account, that we have actually requested for the civil society organizations. And I will give you an account of how much has been used out of these 95, out of the 95 million. But also we've procured kits for the National Shelter Movement, the rape kits, through the very funds of the Solidarity Fund, and conducted integrated campaigns for victim empowerment program and social crime prevention. Look at this slide, Chair. It gives you a breakdown of what has been allocated per province for the CARA funding. It amounts to 85 million, but also the difference of 10 million is money that is now in the coffers of the National Development Agency that will be used for mentoring as well as building the capacity of the civil society organizations. But most of the civil society organizations that benefited here are actually emerging organizations, those that have been struggling, those that can't even raise funds for themselves, those that are in the most external areas of the urban areas in the periphery. So we made it a point that those provinces also benefit from this amount of money. This slide is very important, Chair, on shelters. We have received public buildings that were made available by Public Works for shelters and interim housing arrangements for the survivors. Social development, as well as Public Works, conducted site inspection for KZN in looking at all the issues that face the shelters, I mean the shelter sector in that province, but also the Department of Public Works have also conducted site inspections in these provinces, Malanga Free State and Northern Cape, to make sure that they begin to identify government buildings that they can use for shelters, but buildings that they can also use for communication purposes, for messaging, so that we begin to communicate around the Department of Human Settlement. They have provided a classified list of GBV victims that are in need of housing assistance that they receive from the Department of Social Development. Ours is to follow up and work with them and see whether are we making inroads with these requests or applications, because some of the women have opted not to go back to their own home, but to go ahead and be out of those relationships, whether they were formalized or not formalized, but they don't have a place of abode. And we are working hard with this department to see what is it that can be done in this regard. National consultations have been convened by department with stakeholders towards the development of trying to standardize the services, coming up with norms and minimum standards, and addressing the whole issue of funding the sector in relation to the shelters. And from Public Works, these are some of the provinces that they have visited, and they'll continue to reach out to other provinces as and when they identify unused buildings that they can hand over to the Department of Social Development. DSD received a building at Salhokrop. This building has already been occupied by the Gender-Based Violence Command Center. They've just moved on the 31st of August. It's going to be the new site for the GBV Command Center, and very soon they will be relaunching it within the 100 days that we have set for ourselves. That is a build-up towards the release of activism campaign. The other slide is on Pillar 5 on economic power. At a very high level, without talking to some of the details, we are participating in the economic work stream of government joint. We've made substantial input to the procurement bill of to ensure that it is responsive or transformative, but we've also worked very closely with UN Women in making sure that this kind of work finds its strategic way into the procurement bill. But two workshops have already been convened to deal with the issues of economic empowerment and the role, critical role of the government department. It was supposed through the Public Works Department to have trained the NPOs on the issues of GBV, but it was impossible due to COVID-19. But they've also registered the health and welfare sector, some of their skills program, and they should be ready soon now to begin to roll it out to the civil society organizations that we will be working with. Still on the issues of economic power, processing the appointment of service providers to train, that is still public works, but they are saying in projected base in Mpumalanga area, they have 123 learners that they will have to train on the issues of victim empowerment and some of the basic services that ought to be offered. There's still work that is in progress under COVID-19 measures, and we will talk those issues as well. For August month, there was a targeted focus on unpacking the COVID-19 relief fund that was received by women. That process is still going. The webinar took place on the 31st of August, and also it was more around how we deal with issues of economic justice and rights in women. What are those things that we need to do? We'll be leveraging on one of the district models that deals with the whole issue of how the district model can actually be used for local economic empowerment. The last pillar, which is pillar 6, deals with our role with EPME in developing the MNE framework. You have requested to have it. We will share it with yourself. But also, because this is still for now, for reporting purposes, whilst a bigger MNE system with procedures, logging frameworks, and all of that is being developed, it will be a process that seeks to address a 5-year plan of our MNE system. And here, Chair, because we don't have the capacity, we've reached out to UNFPA, and they are currently working with us in putting this process in place. They have appointed a person to work with us for this period, and that person will also be imparting the knowledge and the skill as they are working with us. But thanks to UNFPA for coming on board and partnering with government, because we are not going to find a way of filling this post. Chair, this one is important. We are in partnership with Google, particularly with the interim technical task team in developing a heat map, which is more of a dashboard that will be shared with the president and thereafter with the public in September. Information will be included on the pilot heat map, will be more on GBV incidents by provinces, positive response action by provinces, and tracker on Women's Month focus. But it will begin to show what are the services that are there in those provinces, what are the issues, what are the areas that are more concentrated, and what kind of problems are there that require intervention. So that's what we are currently working on with UN Women and civil society on this issue and relevant government departments. There's work has been done as a response to COVID-19 and GBVF. In terms of progress, yes, GBVF is now we are ensuring that women access UIF by monitoring those people that are receiving UIF. We are demanding disaggregated data, but also working on a strategic framework on the impact of COVID-19 on women. We are ensuring that equitable access by women enterprise relief measures, something that we continue to advocate for. The Department of Women has conducted a SNAP survey on the impact of COVID-19 on women, and also a gender tracking system to collect disaggregated data that will help us to get a sense of how many women are benefiting, how many younger people are also benefiting, no persons with disabilities. Introduction of COVID-19 social relief of distress grant and temporary increase to other women, particularly the child support grant, we've seen an increase for 6 months as government, but all of these are measures that we are also tracking through our gender tracking system in the department, the COVID-19 tracking system. Chair, the department with social development and civil society, we've developed and have updated a GBV referral pathway, which we have shared with service providers, and it brings in a seamless kind of referral of gender-based violence, the department and GCIS have engaged in an ongoing campaign in communicating messages on gender-based violence. And there was this webinar that was held that I alluded to. This part, I would like to put an emphasis to it. The department with social development and UNFPA, including WaterAid, we've collaborated in the provisioning of menstrual health and hygiene products to women and girls in indigenous households, in shelters for abused women, in informal settlements and quarantine spots, and shelters for the homeless, because during COVID-19, girls' children in some of the schools and in some of the households could not access sanitary towels due to lockdown, and we stepped in an effort to close this gap. These are the technical task team members. I won't mention them. Members can refer to it at their own time. We've outlined the work of the technical task team members, but overall, they are supporting IMC and they are executing the mandate of the IMC. And on this one, Chair, the planned programs for intervention from a behavioral change point of view and mass media campaign is that we are working hard on the mass media campaign for 365 days. And this, we are working very closely with CIS and Brand SA to ensure that we have a sustained mass media campaign on prevention, in particular, prioritizing men. We don't want to leave out men. We continue to encourage that there be a movement against gender-based violence by men, social movement, and all of those kind of structures. We will be pursuing community dialogues on stereotypes in relation to culture and norms, because we have normalized the abnormal. We need to begin to help people to unlearn that which they have learned and which is an acceptable practice in society. Departments will be requested to come on board and assist us in contributing to budgets, but because we have private sector involved, we don't want to rely a lot on government. Now that we're experiencing further budget cuts, we will continue to make sure that we bring in private sector on board and development agencies to work with us on these issues. For the district model, towards conclusion, Chair, we'll be establishing a rapid response structure at community level within the district model, and we'll make sure that the mayors take part, the MMCs take part, the social workers at municipal level play their part on these matters. We will train and support communities in capacity building and making sure that we will stop being strong and deliver intervention services with an in and team of restoring human building, caring and safe communities. But let's follow this. We don't want to forget addressing alcohol and drug abuse. The interface of alcohol and drug abuse is looking for the liquor board address of the times when they open, the times when they close, how they don't sell to children, all of those issues. That's a role that we intend playing and push hard as we engage with the economic cluster, in particular the DTI and other structures. These are some of the interventions. Chair, this one I would like to indicate that we have a challenge with the statistics on GBV. In some instances, we are told, is it increasing, is it decreasing? You don't seem to be reporting and talking in the same language. Let's provide some understanding and explanation. This discrepancy is because of the GBV indicators that we are having and the definitions that are there in the word. Social development is capturing domestic violence broadly in line with the Domestic Violence Act, from emotional abuse, physical abuse, financial abuse, the list is endless in line with the Domestic Violence Act. Yet with police, you'll find that it's just one issue that is being extracted from the Domestic Violence Act. Either we're talking sexual assault, which is part of the contact crimes, but you won't find the rest of these being reported under the social development. So we've come together as guided by an interministerial committee, a team that begins to look at the existing system. We are aware that there is what we call integrated justice system. That system seeks to harmonize existing systems and processes. They are 90% towards conclusion. We are working with them in ensuring that we get a timeline by when will this be concluded. However, in the absence of a concluded process, we've concluded that before statistics is released, we will provide some background as rationale to the statistics so that we don't say it has increased or it has decreased without giving some explanation to it, so that members can understand that we're using different data sources and therefore we'll be able to justify. But what makes it even look social development is that Chairperson, women are more comfortable to call and stay anonymous and speak to someone that they don't see and relate their story in a private space, be afforded the opportunity to be counseled extensively. And in some instances, when they are happy, they make a decision not to even go to the next level of taking it through the entire criminal justice system. These are the challenges, Chair, as we lead towards conclusion. The scale of GBV still remaining high. That's why we're pushing hard for the implementation of the NSP and working hard towards the establishment of the council. I need to indicate, Chair, that we've already finalized our paperwork for the advert. Over the weekend, the advert will be issued. I think it will be on Sunday, one of the newspapers that I am aware of, in terms of those adverts. It will be City Press, it will be Sunday World, and our deadline will be up until Wednesday, the 30th. That will be the deadline for the submission. Then we will begin to work on the next process of the selection, the assessment, and we would like to launch the council during the 16 days of activism. So we have a tight project plan and a tight process map that we will be accounting not only to the IFC but to the president in terms of what is it that we'll be doing and how soon will we be doing that, and have clear indicators around those areas of work once attaining the council. We would like to request following as we recommend, Chairperson, that the portfolio committee should help us to enforce accountability of all the departments on implementation. That's not strategic plan. I'm not so sure how that will work, whether Chairperson will liaise with other chairpersons, because this is a cross-cutting matter across all government departments, particularly the economic cluster that must come on board and play their role. Challenge with enforcement of compliance with reporting requirements by departments. We would like to also address that issue as well, and help us as we deal with the issue of harmonizing our systems, efforts by government and partners to popularize the NSP and use it to raise and heighten awareness. Right now, we have worked and agreed with the civil society organizations, Chair, that they will popularize the NSP within civil society members, within their own constituencies, and that helps us to expand our reach, because we don't have the capacity as a department to do that. But through this collaborative partnership, we are gradually reaching out to the most remote areas through the civil society organizations, engaging members on these matters. Efforts to integrate the NSP targets into the APTs help us as and when they come to check as well that are they doing that as per our advocacy role, minister role to ministers, DG role to DGs, and we are meeting almost on a weekly basis to track and keep persuading them to deal with these issues. Chair, this is a crisis. It requires ownership across sectors. It is a national policy for the whole society to own it up. It puts an emphasis on prevention rather than cure, and it will be anchored through our mass media campaign. We've made an acknowledgement of the weak systems and data that is misaligned, but we are not sitting and not doing anything about it. We have put a team in place supported by FSA and other departments to work on it. We'll be working hard at localizing and ensuring that this multi-sectoral approach and responses are anchored at the local level through our district model, Chair. I'd like to thank you, Chair, with those words. It's about human dignity, it's about healing, it's about safety, it's about freedom and equality in our lifetime. I'd like to submit my presentation, Chair. Thanks.
Hello, honorable members.
What is the thing, Chair?
Honorable members.
What is the thing, Chair?
Akanankinga mamakhawula ukhombe ukuthi u-honorable Masiko must take over.
Okay, sister. Okay,
she's driving.
Okay, sister. Thanks. Sasinabuzo.
It seems as if she's not on the platform. I'm not sure, but we can ask Uneliso Oguti, is Masiko on the platform? Okay.
I don't see her. I'm looking at her from the list of participants, but I don't see her. She was in earlier.
Yes, in earlier.
Yeah. Okay.
Honorable, can you take over so that we can be done with this thing? We are really tired. I'm telling you.
Can you ask questions, honorable members? Thank you very much, DDG and DG with the presentation. Can honorable members ask questions?
Honorable Mgweva, I just want to find out when the presentation for the National Council of GBVF will be presented. Will it be presented after questions taken, or how will it work?
Honorable Sharif, can you repeat your question?
No problem, Honorable Mgweva. I asked, the presentation on the establishment of the National Council of GBVF, will that happen now, or will that presentation take place after inputs on this presentation? I'm just looking for clarity. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sharif. Minister, Deputy Minister, or DD, can you respond to the question? Because I understand the item was clear that you will present the NSP on gender-based violence and the process on the establishment of the National Council Against GBV. Can you then take us through if the process on the establishment of the National Council is going to be presented today? If not, when, if today, can in 3 minutes report on the establishment of the National Council? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Is there any official who want to say something before I speak?
Yes, I wanted to say the presentation by Angie Shoki also spoke to the processes of establishment of the council. However, if they need more information, we can be able to talk to that information. Thank you, Minister.
I agree with you because I think I have heard her going up to the fact that there will be public adverts over the weekend. The only action I wanted to make to that is that of the institutions that have agreed to advertise, GCIS had also raised their hand that they would also be participating in this. I just want to take us back because as South Africans, we like doing things and then go back and go back to do it again and so on and so on. NSP is not new. It's an outcome of a summit that was led by the president. The movement forward was stalled by the lockdown in March 2020 because we had to first adopt that the outcome of that summit through cabinet. Just after the adoption, the lockdown came about. But even with the lockdown, we president appointed an INC of six ministers with an anticipation that we will have a 49-51 council, meaning the future council that had to be formed urgently to start the implementation of the NSP will have six officials and seven people from the civil society organizations. Now, how do we get the seven became an issue. We called a webinar. Then those who attended, the civil society organizations who know the origins of this and who attended the summit said yes to the council, but they want a way forward that would lead in not less than 2 years to a final process that will have gone through Parliament. We realized that we are not going to wait and do nothing about the situation. And they have also admitted, even 2 days ago when I was with Minister Kelly, that we have to adopt the council. And if there's anything else that we need to do, we like the parliament, the bill and the parliamentary process, we will do that, but we cannot watch women dying. So where will we get and how are we going to get the seven people from the civil society? We cannot have all members of the council from the civil society because we will have issues, we'll have other issues. We need partnership. We need government. We need civil society. But in the civil society, you have got special groupings, three of them that I don't have to repeat here, who at least one from that particular area should be represented. That will come out in the advert will be the also a time frame, how much time, you know, what is expected of this, what is again, the council. If things go our way, we really cannot go to another end of September and we do not have a council and women keep dying on daily basis. We are not saying that the council is going to stop gender-based violence and femicide, but we say it gives us a bigger platform for all South Africans from all of walks of life to have a say, to move on with this second pandemic as we are fighting COVID-19. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Maybe Honorable Members, I know why this question from Honorable Sharif. Yes, we've got the document from your department, Minister and Deputy Minister. However, on the National Council for Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, then maybe that's why this question is from Honorable Sharif. The only point where there is a clear proposed MGBF is the organogram. So I will then request that just before your advent, at least the portfolio committee must then the document, the consolidated document, with the one the status, the mandate, the objectives and the rules must be clear to the portfolio committee, so that at least at the end of the day, as members of this portfolio committee, we must be able to, all of us, own this council. If then we've got a blank, even on the nomination process and selection process, it's blank, Honorable Minister. And even the criteria is blank. Even when one asks us as members of this portfolio committee out there, we can't even defend it. I think just before your advent, can you take us into confidence in terms of all the issues so that at least we've got a consolidated document of the National Council for Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. But also we must agree on the proposed organogram. That is important because we are the ones who must also account to Parliament when this was. If there is a blank document on the NC of the National Council, can't even engage as honorable members because the document itself is very big. I know that the document was sent to us on the 1st of September at 9:09, but the document itself is very blank, honorable minister.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Honorable Mkweva. Hello?
Thanks, Chair. You can speak. I will close.
I think I was listening to what you were saying. I think I agree with you. What the department needs to do is to come and make a presentation, a holistic presentation, on how is gonna the organogram is gonna look like, everything that they've read now, so that you know we are able to respond, because you know the other thing that the DM and minister that is gonna be a problem for us is that sometimes you go and present to a standing committee, with the multi-party standing committee, which does not do oversight over your department. And at the end of the day, the department will think that when you presented at the multi-party standing committee, you have accounted to Parliament. But multi-party standing committee is not the one that has oversight over the department. So in order for us to have the same understanding on the things that the department is doing in relation to everything that is pertaining gender-based violence, the NSP, the criteria, and so on. And also, we want to know, because, people have been talking about NGOs, I have interest to know that how many NGOs are you going to have? And how many, because the problem is, the way I listen to people when they talk about NSP, it's like NGOs, they are going to be 51%. So 51% against 49, it means the gender-based violence and femicide issues are going to be dealt with by NGOs. So government will not have authority in directing on what is that needs to be done. That's where my fear is. You know, and some members have been asking me about this thing, and I kept saying, no, we're waiting for the department to come and make a presentation to the portfolio committee.
if NGOs are going to reduce to 1%, so that's it. Who is running, who is taking responsibility on this issue? Is it NGOs or is government? You know, if you were in parliament, I think today, the members were saying parliament must establish an ad hoc committee that is going to oversee all issues of gender-based violence and femicide. And some of us were saying, we don't understand what is the ad hoc committee going to do. Because, one, there is a department that is a portfolio committee that is overseeing that over your department, doing oversight over your department, and where you're accounting. There is in issues of police, there is a portfolio committee on police, issues of justice, there is a portfolio committee on justice, and there are other issues of tutela centers, there is a portfolio committee on social social development. So I think all role playing departments, it must be clear on what is it that they are going to do, so that we alleviate you in all the things that people are raising. When you talk about, I think I'm getting lost here, I don't even know where am I now. But the thing is, I wanted also to participate in this meeting. So I think, Minister and DM, it's important that the department must come to the portfolio committee and give us a full report on how are you going to establish what will be the role of NGOs and what and the interministerial committee that is there. Because we understand that you are going to form partnerships, but I have a problem that if the NGOs are going to be more than yourself, then I'm not sure. So this confusion that you are all having, the only people who can say it is yourself. So maybe what we need to do is to have a whole holistical approach rather than and presentation, rather than having piecemeal. Did you see, like Honorable Sheriff, before I left Honorable Mkweba's house, was asking But I think a minister and DM, maybe but so exact, what is it that you are intending to do? I don't want to be confused as they say. Honorable, whoever over to you, I think I'm getting lost here.
No, Chair, please do not leave. Thanks, Chair of the Portfolio Committee. Do you want to have a bite, Honorable Members? Honorable Members? Amakaula?
Yes, Madam. Hello? Honorable, I have Vale.
I'd also like to engage on the presentation.
But you keep calling them and they are not responding. I think I'm going to present.
Yes, Chair, come in, President, so that you can get a capping and be able to engage.
Honorable Sharif, Honorable Mpiti, Honorable Songo, Honorable Maluleke, over to you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Mgweba. A quick one on what the chairperson was saying. I absolutely agree with her.
100%. The presentation that was sent to us as committee members by Maliswa not only included the NSP presentation, but it also included the GBV council presentation, where Honorable Mgweba, you correctly pointed out, where they speak about the purpose, the establishment, the objective, and most importantly, the selection criteria and the organogram that I would have liked to engage on. So outside DG presentation, and I'm very happy to see that we can progress hours because all of us somewhere or the other participated together and must as a department, as a implementing body, as the IOC, must have risk mitigation plan. It's impossible to say, oh, we'll put out the fires when it comes. What should happen is there should already be risk mitigation plans in place. So if something does go, you're able to measure it way before it happens, so that you can control how much things actually go wrong. So the fact that you say the concern of me, and I would like to ask you, do you have a risk plan? And I want to find out if the department that objects to implement if the Department of Police don't do that, what is the consequence management of departments not implementing what they're supposed to be implementing? On slide number 7, it speaks about the ASP caucus, and why has the other political party caucuses not been involved in the presentation of the NSP by the plan to get this presentation to other political party caucuses? My next thing is on slide 19. Can you explain why 402 applications were processed in 1 month versus 38 processed in 4 months? Why is there such a big difference between processing 38 claims in 4 months and then all in 1 month in August, which just happens to be Women's Month, 402 applications get processed? Does this mean that only in August will applications be processed on a quicker basis, and we should expect for every other month to be slower than usual? My last question, Chairperson, because of time, and I don't want to keep everybody up, and with your permission, Chairperson, I would like to submit these questions for written responses given the time limitations that we have. But DDG, there was absolutely no mention of the LGBTIQA+ community or gender non-conforming people in either of the presentations. When we speak about women, we also need to be cognizant of the fact that we need to speak to people who identify as women and those who are gender non-conforming, because there is a lot of violence towards gay people, towards lesbian people, towards bisexual people, towards transgender people, and the fact that your presentation did not give us progress on what's happening with the LGBTIQA+ community and the gender non-conforming community is problematic, and I would like some information on that. I'll stop there for now, Honorable Mgweba, but as I said, I would appreciate it if the Chair would allow us to send through additional questions that we have that we don't have the time to speak to today.
And then we can get some response from the committee, as we have done before. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sharif.
Honorable Mgweba. Honorable Mgweba. My apologies for interjecting. You know, the minister and the DM and the DG, you know, I'm just thinking about that. You know, when you talk of NGOs, I think me, as the portfolio committee chair, I will be in this audit and verify the legitimacy of all those NGOs. Because, you see, my fear is one, that people heard that there's 1.6 billion. And there are, all of a sudden, many people are having NGOs. And what exactly are they doing? I'm not sure. And I'm afraid that, you see, as we talk of NGOs and NGOs or whatever, I'm worried that I think DG and Minister and DM, you'll have to audit. Okay, those NGOs and NGOs are legitimate. When have they, when did they apply to the NGOs? And because, you know, what we've seen during the PPE thing now, during COVID time, we saw company evolve last year, but all of a sudden, they award umsebenzi wama PPEs, wabo 800,000 or million or whatever. So I think, Nani, you must be very careful. See, now with all those NGOs, government servants and others, we'll want you to give us an audited and verified information that those NGOs. I think that's what I wanted to raise with you. Ngiyacima Honorable Mgweba, I'll come back when I enter my house.
Thank you, Chief. Drive safe then.
Honorable Mgweba, I'm back on.
Yes. Honorable Chiti.
Honorable Mgweba.
Honorable
Mgweba.
Honorable
Mgweba. Thank you very much, Honorable Mgweba. Chairperson Sengkhave kakhulu. Thank you, bese ngithi ngiyashiya ngibona silate. Uyabona le nto zama-civic society, ama-NGOs, ama-NPOs, ifinithi sizosebenza nabo. Funa nazi isikili sisazokwenza enye ye-crisis phezu kwenye i-crisis. Engivumelana no-chairperson 100%. Uyabona njengoba siphuma ku-COVID-19. Atholi nathi abantu azange abazokusela eyakubona. Njengokubona kuvele namanje ikade emgwaqweni nje ibangele nayibona ngoba izimali eziningi ziye kubona. Zangaya ngisho kunabantu abakasebenza imisebenzi njengokucula kanjalo beyiphilisa ngayo. Asaimali zaya kunabakantu njengokuthi bayosiza phana. Ama-NGOs
I'm going to go to the hospital.
Yes, Chair.
Okay.
Yes, Chair Raniva. Hello?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think honorable members have covered me, but I just want to take the DG to slide number 23, where she mentioned, you know, am I clear? There's an audio that's disturbing me. Honorable Mukwema.
Yes, we are listening, Honorable
Mukwema. Yes, Honorable Mukwema. Now, like him, there's this echo sound that's very disturbing. Like number 23, since I said I'm covered, but it mentioned that DSD and public workers are putting some buildings or shelters or buildings of shelters in provinces. So I saw it mentioned in Barberton that a building was approved by DSD. I want to put it that the department must follow up and monitor these things because I do not believe it since I am from Barberton. And in Barberton, and also the DSD went down in February. People are struggling. They have to go to town for the other office that's falling apart. So I do not believe the report that's saying that buildings were approved by DSD. I would like just the department to follow up on some matters before they report to the committee. And then also on the issue of NGOs, as the chairperson has alluded, that it is a matter of department outlining, auditing them to see if they are authentic and when were they formed, because we've seen problems with COVID-19 with these funds and COVID-19 PPEs and all those things, and also that the NGO, the process of how were they identified can also be clarified there. Thank you very much.
Honorable Maluleke.
Thank you, Honorable Weber. I think I'm covered by most of the honorable members, but I just want to emphasize on the issue of what you said about maybe this thing was supposed to come to the committee first so that we can understand the mandate, the composition, and so on. Because my worry also is on the composition of civil organization and six officials. So the balance there, I am not sure how did they come to that number. But then I heard that over the weekend there will be a public advert on the establishment of this council. So I'm not sure whether, is it going to go ahead even though the committee still have got some concern of not being fully aware of what really is all about this council. But some of the issues honorable members have covered me. Thank you, Chair.
I'm home, Honorable Mukwema.
Yes. Thank you so much that you are safe home. But over to you, Chair, but I've got only three questions.
Fine.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, I think we are agreeing, all of us, that one, the document on the National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide has not been sent to us. The only document that we have from the 1st of September is a blank document. But that, I just saw it now. There is a document that has been flagged in on our screen. And we are agreeing that the department must go back and send the full document to the honorable members in terms of all the processes of the National Council Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. And as such, Chair, we are agreeing that now that the advert will be out, it can't be the advert can't go out while we have not engaged the full document on the National Council of on gender-based violence and femicide. I think we're agreeing, honorable members. But however, on just before I give the minister, the deputy minister, and the department, one will want to understand in terms of the national strategic plan, who will ensure the adequate resourcing of the NSP? And secondly, who will then the National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide account to? Are they going to account to the president, to the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities? Or are they going to account to Parliament, obviously, through the portfolio committee, and then the department? Or what will be the responsibility of the interministerial committee? Because there are a lot of things. There's a council, there's an interministerial committee, and also there will be a council. Who accounts to who? And lastly, who will then decide on the evidence-based programs of the national strategic plan? And what will be the first goal standards, honorable minister and the DG and the deputy minister? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable Mkweba. I think I also want to understand the role of all the committees that you're talking about. If my memory serves me well, yeah, there was a time where minister was presenting about the inter-ministerial the committee. And maybe we that's why I'm saying we need to get a proper a presentation so that we understand exactly the portfolio committee. Because with this thing, there's no shortcut. Because I'm afraid that if we, as the members of this portfolio committee, we don't understand what is going on, who is doing what, and why why are officials less than the other people? I'm not sure. We need a proper explanation so that we can be able to understand why. Is government accounting to civil society now? Or government is forming, establishing a working relationship with civil society? So we must understand exactly who is accounting to whom. If I am the one who's giving you money, why should you have more power than me? For me, it doesn't. So I think we need to get a more explanation. The department, when they go to in multi-party standing committee, we must talk with the multi-party standing committee is dealing with what? And we as the portfolio committee, who is doing oversight over this department, who are doing what? Who are going to be taking? But I think for now, where I'm sitting, I'm really confused. Even if somebody can come and ask me about to ask the CMU, if ever it will send it out, I will not be able to. And confidently talk about that address because I know nothing. So if you can imagine, if me, I'm confused. What about other people? And how are we going to hold you accountable on these matters? So we must do exactly so that even when you come and present your strategic a framework, a strategic plan, or ATP, we must be able to locate people who feel that they are facing violence and femicide, people who feel that
council and we must be able to I'm sure at least the minister and I would want to us to have a workshop with the department so that we workshop us, we take us through as honorable members so that we have a clear understanding. Because if we don't understand, I don't put people on the CEO, but it's not good.
We are happy you have arrived safely, Home Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister.
I was amazed.
Ask you that question.
Am I speaking?
Yes, no, Minister, it's fine. Okay.
There's a document that's almost 2 years old. National Strategic on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. I don't know how many times, and justified, did we say in the portfolio committee, we are not entertaining this until it goes to cabinet and that it first be adopted by cabinet so that cabinet be accountable. Cabinet adopted the document and came back to us with a six-member committee that must make sure that we take this matter forward. If you check in the document, yes, to the workshop. I don't know when you want to go to the workshop because we said meeting starting at 7 in the evening or 6. Now it's 11 and we want to stop again. But let me come back to what I was saying. In the NSP document, on page 58, it clearly states out roles and responsibilities of the Interministerial Committee that reports to Cabinet and President and Government. National Council of Gender-Based Violence also has its own roles, meaning there's no mix-up, but if we say let's start a meeting at this time of the night and let's go home, and then the last one is for now, because like you, we really need we're tired, but we cannot keep postponing taking this thing by its horns and not workshopping. And okay, the one thing that fascinates me is now we want CVs of all civil society organizations. The NSP is a product of a summit, of a multi-party summit, which was led by the president himself. But it came back because we wanted it to come back, the final document, so that we go through it, through, and then we read, we take it to cabinet, and cabinet take their view, and then we bring it back to leaders and say, we want to deal with gender-based violence. They say, but you know, it's not complete, because inside the document, it says you cannot say you've got, that you've completed your step number one. This is our step number one. Step number one is President, IMC, Council, small Council. From there, we need a period of about 2 years working on this while not leaving people dying in the streets and doing nothing, of a parliamentary process where we will work out all these things that we're asking. It could take us 2 years to quarrel about this document, this NSP. If I can try and be clever and say, I they fear me, not what me fear. We can sit on it and do nothing and watch. But inside the document, it says there is no IMC without representatives of the civil society because we had involved multi-party from the outset. When that beautiful lady from Cape Town University, Uyinene.
Yeah.
Yes. Now we are going back. We want CVs of NGOs. NGOs are formed every day. For us to get the seven big ones and make sure that the ones that are not gender compliant, the ones that I almost like calling them by names, the ones you know, the big ones, who should be part of this thing as we start. We can't. I can't. Because, again, I'll get into trouble. But this thing of not doing anything and keep, you know, taking 5 steps forward and fall back to the solo one day. Because now, lastly, I'm listening to Pete. Pete is one of the reasons why, even if I wasn't feeling well, even if the daughter said you're on sick leave, I said no. Let me go sit there at night and hear. There's a young man there who said he doesn't have time to ask me questions. Now I see he is still saying he doesn't have time. Now he's asking me, why did I attend a Zoom of the Commonwealth countries? Are we members of the Commonwealth? Yes. When did we get the invitation? Yesterday. What is the invitation about? Can we please catch up on how COVID-19 is affecting women and the similarities? Where maybe there was no time to even just share this. It was not even on the program because it was not a formal meeting, but it was a comparison of notes. But there was no way me I could say I am not coming because I didn't get a permission from my committee to attend this meeting. Lastly, President has already announced.
No, but Minister, you don't have permission from us. Why do you have to get a permission from us?
No, I'm just giving it as an example because that's what you were saying when you were driving.
I didn't hear him.
No, sir, point of order. Minister, just to clarify. No, what I said was, Minister, was that we require information about activities that the department is doing so in which we can inform our constituencies of the activities of the department. Not that we need to give you permission. For us to know what
you gave an example with this meeting because I mentioned it. You said you didn't even know the minister was. You said so. I didn't pick up from the street. Because I was still listening.
The department is operating outside. We do not have the information of what the department is doing. And all we are asking for is for the department, when there are activities, to send us that information so that we can furnish that to our constituencies. It's a simple ask, Minister. It's not to say anything else.
Oh, okay. Now I understand. Okay, Minister, I want to cut you short. All what I'm saying as the members of the Portfolio Committee, please, you must take us on board so that we can be on the read from the same page with you. Because if we are being asked about the things that the department is doing in relation to issues of gender and violence, the criteria used for appointing the council and so on. We must know exactly what is it that the department is doing. We are not saying don't do your work as the department and don't do your responsibilities yourself and as politicians and as accounting officers. No, we're not saying that. See, now we're saying things are true. Even if you can request anything without us calling you, you can do that. And say, you know what, there is this thing. Can we come and brief you? Tina will apply to Parliament. So you don't have to wait for us to secure a meeting for the department. No. Anytime you want to brief us on Tina development, please come and brief us. That's all we're saying. Because I think it's in a place. And I might think it's Wama, even say or NGO. We're not saying that. All what you are saying to me, as and when you are dealing with all these matters, please verify whether they are legitimate, whether they are not fly by night, because what we have seen now during this COVID period is really despicable. That's all what we're saying to you as a department. So that we don't want you tomorrow, when you come to the portfolio committee, to because now there is no way that you want to ask the question if we need them to do it. But if you give us information, remember, Minister, you must also be safe to us. Because if you hear your own talented MSP, definitely that we have a little bit. So at least Imani, don't act on things that you feel with it. We can do these things with immediate effect. Then at the 2021, you can do them after. We're not saying that as a particular committee. All what we want to see you do is exactly what you are responsible for. So that is in that thread, that honorable members, when you ask questions, we don't ask questions because we want to fight the department, no. We must be able also to account to Parliament. So if you can take it that way, that will be much better. Which is some of the things that members were asking you when I was driving. Okay, we can continue, Minister. Well, could there be a Minister or GM?
I'm asking to leave because I have to see at 8 in the morning.
Yeah, but as long as we're going to leave, it's fine. If we're going to leave, honorable members.
Thank you, Chair. I think before the minister goes, just to say that, Minister, just to clarify and be clear that I completely support what the Chair has said. We want the department to succeed, and we're just asking so that we know more information so we can inform our constituencies, because members of this committee are also equally under pressure on the response of government, the response of Parliament to the issue of GBV. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us to work around the clock to ensure that we can bring those pieces and those activities that the department is involved in to these communities so that they know that we are not just sitting and doing nothing, but we are fully alert and aware of the issues that are happening on the ground. But with that, Chair, I receive what the Minister has said. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to echo what you said, Chairperson, and completely support you in what you're saying. I agree. I mean, it is confusing who implements who oversees what, who reports to who. And I think that we are in our right to ask for clarity-seeking questions. And if you're right, Chairperson, if we as MPs are confused, can you imagine how confused constituencies are and how confused people on the ground are when it comes to such things? So I just want to echo what you said, Chairperson, that we have a role to play of oversight, and we have a role to hold the department and the minister accountable. And this is what we're doing. Even if we stay till midnight, this is our job, and we have to do it to effectively and to the best that we can. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, I'm back to what we've agreed upon, that at least that document on the National Council, the establishment, the mandate and everything, because we must agree that that document that has been sent to us, it's blank. And the only like a page that we can be able to read is the one of the implementation modalities, which is the one on our screen, but you know the other pages are all blank. At least if the document was sent like the national strategy plan document, there's no longer questions, but whatever the department is going to do over the weekend or that week, but at least the document sent to us, a full document, so that we must understand the mandate, the purpose, and also the how they're going to, you know, do their selection criteria. Because you can see that document has got a lot of processes, but it's blank. You can't do anything. That's all I can request to the department. Nothing else, Chair. Thank you very much. And good night.
Supported. Any other member?
Chairperson, can I check with you if we can send through questions for the presentation of the NSP so that the department can answer them in writing? I just want to get clarity from you, Chairperson.
Yes, you can send them through a notice, it's fine. You can. If there are other issues that you get suggested answers, you can still write to Minister, and I will go through all those questions, and then we'll send through to the department.
DM?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm still there's something I think, I don't know whether it was yesterday or when, I said to her, when we produce our slides and everything, we should make sure that they are accessible to our target audience. So some of the information I think which honorable members are concerned about, it might be in one of the slides. But as you all know, it depends on how you lay bare your information or you summarize it for those who read it every day. I think that's our problem. I really feel so, because even the minister feels bad. She doesn't understand what is the problem. That's what I picked up. But I would say on our side, I will go back and really talk to the DG strongly that when we prepare, when we delay ourselves, we should make information as accessible as possible. Even yesterday, we said the same thing. There was a meeting. We emphasized the same thing of transparency. So the DG will say, how is she going to pick up the slides that have got information that honorable members are concerned about, or they need more clarity from them, and really bullet it in such a way that it's accessible to people. I know some officials in the department, they think, you know, okay, maybe let me leave that for the department and us. But for the purpose of this, the DG must really assist in just packaging the information in such a way that it addresses the core questions, which any portfolio committee will want clarity on, but it's A, I know in some of the slides. Thank you very much, DG. I leave it with you how you are going to manage it to assist to take us out of this, I don't want to call it a deadlock, but where it's like there are too many unanswered questions. It's in our interest to bear everything clear and open for support. I can identify with honorable members. You know, yesterday I went to the policy conference in my party. There were so many, such a hot-heated discussion on this. And coming from the Department of Women, I was saying, I wonder how much prepared I am to defend whatever we are doing. So it's understandable. We're all on the edge. The sketch is with us all the time. So, Didi, I leave it with you to commit whatever you'll be able to do for honorable members.
Thank you very much, GM.
Thank you, GM. Chair, with your permission, we will respond to the many questions. We've noted them in writing, but also we will await the portfolio committee's invite so that we can come and present only on the council, all processes, objectives, and all that. But also, yes, GM, the presentation is loaded with information. So what we'll do the web presentation, a web document, so that it explains all the things that are in the presentation, so that it's easier also for members to be able to go and share that information with their constituencies. But also there was most of the time there was a recurring issue about us sharing information, maybe not even only information about the NSP and the council, but everything that we do in the department. I promise that we will do that, but also we will invite the portfolio committee in our webinars and other programs that we'll be involved in. I think we will definitely come and present, but also we will send information in a web document. In that way, it will give more information than maybe the bullets that are in the PowerPoint presentation. And we apologize for maybe our information not being accessible. It was not intentional. Normally, it's easier to talk to a presentation, but we understand. Or maybe in future, we will send a web document and a PowerPoint so that it's easier to present on a PowerPoint, but members will have read the web document and they can be able to understand and go through with us on the PowerPoint presentation. We will respond to all the questions that have been asked. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG and honorable members who are flying to Durban in the morning. I think your arrangements have been made. It's not our intention to keep you at time, but it's due to urgent call. So thank you very much, Minister GM and DG and your officials, and have a good night.
Okay. Then Funumbuzer Lapa go Deputy Minister. Why can Mr. go to Corner Bantabazan and the Gadella Labantu Nababa Candy Mountain called Queen? Yakana go some please. Oh, but Gaba Tempis would send the Fagilu Tabu Minister to Corner to Ukona Zoba Friends. Labantaba or go to Madinus, Labana was Missouri. Basebenze babafuna ukulekelela abakhandayo noma babamba inkunzi badla ama-truck.
No, I'm not
talking about street kids. Ngisho mina labo makhenikhi abona abantu abakhanda imoto le-youth leyo labantu abakhanda imoto emgwaqweni wayethembisile uminister u-deputy minister.
Yebo.
Le outside the meeting, ngayethula umama ophethe small business wazowathi hawu kwamanye amaprovinsi ukabaqoqe. So I'm working on it. Umakhawula makastick it to me. Siyayini.
Understand uthi mele ukuthi please stand us some ngoba bayahlupheka abanawo shamanzi bagcina sebetshontsha ugesi namanzi abanganisho ishelter labantu bayasiza kunoma kubanje inkunzi zama-drugs bagcina bakwazi ukuthi bathole amasenti baqashe nabanye. Ngiyabonga.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, thank you.
Samsolala
ayinolala ngoba imithing yethu iqala ekuseni.
Khona imithing kusasa.
Yes,
no 9,
the
PGE.
Oh,
okay.
Thank
you. Hey.
And
good night.
Good night.
Vula!
Vale.
Goodbye,
study.
Sequel. I'm going to go to the school. Vula!
Bye.
Mande.